With our guest, Michael Tennyson. His book is called The Next Species. Are we going to get wiped out? Let's take your calls and find out when we come back. We'll get your take on it. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Tennyson with us. We'll get to your calls. Michael, Stephen Hawking has said that for us to survive, we need to move on and off this planet. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, Stephen Hawking is a better intelligent than myself, so, you know, I listen to that. There's certainly there's opportunity for that. I part of my book had a chapter on it, on, you know, flight to Mars, what it'd be like to set up a colony there. And I worked a little bit with Robert Zubrin, who was also a Simon & Schuster author. And
yep.
he's
a regular guest on the show, too. Good guy.
Yeah. Okay, good. And he, you know, his whole idea of establishing a colony on Mars would be a great idea. And, you know, it's, the only trouble is it's a one-way journey. Like, there's the Mars program right now that they have in Europe has quite a few people that have volunteered to go. But, you know, it's like it's a one-way deal. And that's part of the – that would be an opportunity for another species right there. You have a man living in an environment where there's a third as amount of the amount of gravity as there is on Earth. You have problems with UV radiation. You have problems with oxygen, and these things are great revolutionary forces for a change. And I talked to a couple of NASA scientists who believe that. We could have another species coming back from Mars if we set up in a colony there, like the astronauts that come back, the cosmonauts actually that came back from the space station. They found that when they came back, that after spending a good deal of time on the space station, the weight in their legs actually gravitates to their upper body. You actually could see it in photos. They just get bigger in the face, and their legs turn into kind of bird legs. So, you know, and when they get that, when they bring them back to Earth, when they brought them back to Earth, they didn't have the energy to climb the stairs to take their award. So there's no, you know, there's no award giving when they come back from the space station. They have to adjust to the gravity here once again. So this is a great evolutionary force and a great opportunity to have another species. There are other opportunities for establishing colonies. Some of the moons of Titan are some of the moons of Saturn. There's also we're looking at other possible planets in the solar system that could be in a zone that were habitable to us. And these are things that are going to take a lot of technology, a lot of growth, but they're within the realm of possibility if we don't go extinct in the meantime. So if we give ourselves a little, you know, if we hold back on eating everything and consuming everything, and we could have space stations in we could have other colonies of life, Homo sapiens, other species, have other humans out there in the solar system, in the universe. I believe that's definitely a possibility, and a good one.
To the phones we go now. Anthony is driving in Nashville, Tennessee. Anthony, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hey, it's a pleasure to talk to you both.
Thank you, sir.
Real quick, I think, you know, the fact that the resources are being strained by so many people lends credence to the theory that the elite would like to get rid of most of us down to 500 million. And the other thing is, I think what happened to Neanderthals is they were the smart ones. And so when the new Earthlings or the new humans came along, they got jealous of how smart they were and did away with them. What do you think?
Well, you know, I kind of think, yeah, what I've read is that Neanderthals were a species that they lived in forested areas, and they hunt close quarters. In other words, they hunt with spears where they actually got in contact with the the animal and stab the animal, you know, so that they're really kind of wrestling these creatures to the ground. They're wrestling their dinner to the ground. And they looked at the bones of different Neanderthals, and they look like bronco busters. You know, that they're similar to that. They have that many breaks in them. What happens is humans, Homo sapiens, comes out of Africa about 70,000 years ago, and it starts going into Europe. And what it's got is it's got some advantages. It has clothes which actually Neanderthals may have had too, but it also has it's a lighter body. It doesn't actually kill from close quarters. It kills from afar. It had a spear that had a piece of wood that would actually kind of toss the spear and give it a little bit extra leverage, and he could toss the spear at a distance and keep away from the creature he was trying to bring down. But also, what was really a big thing was the fact that they started eating fish, and they started eating berries, and they were omnivorous. They could eat a lot of different things, and so they were just more adaptable than the Neanderthals. And you know, what they kind of think is that early populations of man are pretty nasty to one another. If they have an advantage over the other, they just tend to wipe the other out. I mean, they go for the resources that the other's got, and so that's kind of what I think happened to the Neanderthals. They feel that Neanderthals are some of the last populations were held up in Gibraltar in the caves just right at the mouth of the Mediterranean, and that's kind of where they died out. That's what I've read, but that's just the latest theories, you know, and scientists are looking at old bones, and it's a little hard to figure out everything that's really going on when we're looking at these old fossils. But, you know, that's the latest theory that I've run into.
Michael, the hour before you, I had Michael Cremo on, who was talking to us about what scientists are now believing is that Neanderthals and modern humans mated. So right. that tells me that the modern humans somehow came about while the Neanderthals were still on this planet. Taking the religious aspects out of this and those stories of, you know, how we were created,
right.
Let me ask you this then. How could modern humans have evolved? Did they evolve from Neanderthals? I don't understand how that may have happened.
No, they think that actually that Homo sapiens evolved in Africa, and the Neanderthals, they evolved in Europe from another Homo heidelbergensis, I think it is, and they they're actually out of Africa for a while and adapted to the European environment a little bit better, and what you're getting is Homo sapiens coming up and actually mixing with them and actually trading with them and then mating with them, you know, and this is actually one of they actually feel that there's a gene that gave us speech, and it's actually from the Neanderthals, so that we actually might have gotten a present from one of these matings that we actually learned how to talk.
Next up, Michael's in Albany, New York. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, George.
Sure Michael. Thing. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, it's listening to the whole program. It's really interesting.
Thank you.
I'm looking at several things. Nostradamus said, I believe it, there's a group that would leave for Mars, and they would find that they took the problem with them. That's the reason they fled here. On the other hand, I look at the ones that will be remaining here, and I see the crossbreeding could occur just like with the beasts that are out there right now crossbreeding. Polar bears and grizzlies and so on, wolves and coyotes and such as that. They're crossbreeding and developing a newer strain. And then I see that man, on the other hand, is becoming more from bisexual to unisexual to to the male to male, female to female, and there's no love there. There's just simply the concept of a different frame of love, that and it's not going to produce the kind of offspring that they might want. And to make it short, I believe the Nazis try to develop a super race, and probably that would be the same direction, but I don't think that they would have succeeded any more than the Nazis did.
All right. I don't know. There's not a question there, but just a comment, Michael.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a lot of changes that could be happening right now on Earth and in man. And Henry Harpending and Greg Cochran, Cochran and Harpending wrote this book, The Last 10,000 Years, and they say that they looked at the mitochondrial DNA, part of the DNA that extends the last through generations. And they come to the conclusion that in the last 10,000 years, man has actually evolved far more than he has prior to that. A lot of evolutionary biologists like to think that, you know, once we develop tools and once we learn how to dress ourselves, that evolution stopped. But what they're saying is evolution is actually accelerated. There's more forms of evolution going on right now than there have been in the past. And one of the big ones is just our ability to digest milk, to digest the enzyme in milk, and lactose tolerance. And this is like lactose tolerance is like a byproduct of a genetic mutation that is actually now 30% of the people in the world are lactose tolerant or more. And so, you know, yeah, there's possibility. There's all kinds of possibilities and a lot of reasons underneath those possibilities for these changes. And yeah, the world is changing, and evolution is changing too. Just like the technology, evolution is changing too. Biology is changing too.
Michael, could any of this been avoided by humans, where we wouldn't be in this possible position of extinction?
Well, if back in 1800, if we just started to really clamp down on population, yeah, we might have, that could have been avoided. A lot of people talk about climate change as being our biggest threat. I really kind of think it's population. And I believe that if we were back in 1800, if we only had a billion people on Earth, we wouldn't be quite as worried about climate change as we are now with our giant population. So I really think that the population is the problem. Population is really the problem, and and if we could have stopped reproducing at some point, like right after World War II, I don't know what happened there, but it was this huge population growth, and whatever caused that, if that could have been addressed in a rational way at the time, if that could have been viewed as the crisis that it was and that we're now saddled with, we would have had a chance. Just in the last 50 years, we could have headed it off.
But we did not, did we?
We did not.
Well, maybe these elitists are correct then. Maybe the population of the planet needs to be reduced down to 500 million.
I don't like that philosophy. I think we could do it slower. You know, I think we could just get rid if we just started talking about population. My family grew up in the Catholic Church, and so the Pope now comes out with this encyclical about the environment, but doesn't mention population. And you know, I feel sorry about that. You know, I feel we have to. You know, that's really the crux of the problem. And we just got to admit it and talk about it a lot, and maybe we could actually come to some resolutions. We could at least stop it. I mean, that's what the fellows that are talking about us entering in a mass extinction are saying, is that there is still a chance to do an about-face rear march.
So there is a little hope here.
There's a little hope. We could pull a big U-turn real quick. And there's even history that man has gone through some major social changes Michael Mann wrote this piece for, what is it, Ryan Magazine, I believe it was, and he talked about how the abolition of slavery actually happened over a fairly short amount of time. Within 20 or 30 years, most of the world had abolished slavery. And same similar situations happened with women's rights. You know, although, you know, people would argue that, like, you know, there's still some lingering difficulties. But, I mean, the massive change, the vote, the allowing of the women to vote, just that in itself has been a massive, was a massive change. The whole change in the attitude towards gay populations now, you know, and that's, you know, Ireland just voted for, you know, gay rights. You know, it just, I think that, like, there are some chances for big, huge shifts in social norms in the human race still. And if we could hit that population one and do something as big as slavery, the abolition of slavery, giving the women's women's suffrage and gay rights all at once, I think we could do it.
Well, I think what's going to happen is the next flare is going to wipe us out, Michael. Unless we protect our power grid, we're going to be toast.
There's a lot. Yeah, the power grid is a big deal. The power grid is a big deal, and it's one of those things, that could require that we wouldn't do something like that, that this is no longer we're not all at war. And, God, you know, that would be a major change in philosophy, major change in social structure.
Let's go to David in San Diego. Let's see if we got some time here for you. David, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to toss a few things at you for
sure.
Saying that the planet can support a large population. I read a book by David Hatcher Childress. I'm sure
yes.
You're aware of him.
Sure, he's been on the show many times.
Yeah, he, in one of his books, he was talking about this vast agricultural project you can see from space in Southeast Asia, and that it was a terracing project for, he theorized that it was probably for cultivating rice, and that with the square mileage of it, it could feed approximately 12 billion people, and it was vast, but he said it was mostly decayed, mostly run down, and then there is only a very small percentage of it that's actually still in use today by area farmers, and that alone would be a rice product to feed 12 billion people. That's pretty amazing. So that might have been a ancient culture that had that going on. But also, I believe you had a guest on not too long ago who spoke of for population as in area space on the planet that house people.
Yes.
Japan, about 1,100 square feet for the average family. 7 billion people could fit in the state of Texas alone with just that type of.
Yeah, that's true. That was I think Jim Mars was talking about that. But you know, the bottom line is going to come down to, of course, resources. We've got shortages in California. Water is scarce, very scarce, and you know, that's going to be huge, Michael. That is going to be a major story one day. Well, stick with us. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take some more phone calls with Michael Tennyson, the author of the book called The Next Species, Whether You Think We Are in a Mass Extinction Mode or Not. Check in with us as we take calls. And what about that possibility that an asteroid could hit us? You know what? It's a matter of when, I think. We'll be back. And our guest, Michael Tennyson, we're going to take some more calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. His book is called The Next Species. Hey, by the way, Beyond Belief is our television program. I'd love to talk about mass extinctions on that program as well. And you can watch those shows, all of those past shows, by simply going to the website, beyondbelief.com. There's a special trial going on right now, so take advantage of that, beyondbelief.com. Welcome back. Here we are with Michael Tennyson, of course. Michael, where do we get your book, The Next Species? How do folks find it?
Oh, well, it's on Amazon.com. It's at Barnes & Noble bookstores. It's out there quite a bit. You can even get it from Simon & Schuster, you know, simonschuster.com. Yeah, it's available all over right now.
What is your next venture or trip?
My next venture is I'm trying to do a book on breakneck autumn, looking at can man survive without the natural world? And so one of the aspects of the next species is I'm basically, it's kind of adventure science. I'm touring the world, going to all these neat spots and describing what's there and using that to talk about the next species. Well, I'd like to do that in the same way and talk about the services that the different environments actually offer for man. So, I mean, what are the best, you know, is there a reason to save nature? You know, so that's actually my next venture. I just got back from England and spent some time there. And my next adventure is, waiting around the corner pretty soon.
All right, let's take some final calls here for you, waiting around the corner. Michael in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Michael, go ahead.
Yes, I'm noticing a little serendipity with the name Michael.
There's lots of them, lots of them.
There's lots of them.
Your former speaker, Michael Cremer, he gave something hopeful, saying that there's evidence that modern men may be hundreds of millions of years on this planet. Hundreds of millions of years?
Yes. No, we've only been there 200,000 years.
No, I'm talking about Michael Cremo, Michael. He believes that mankind is at least 100 million years old, past civilizations.
Okay.
Yes, and another former guest of George Knapp, Sunday evening,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Ruth Kasner, I believe, she was talking about a kind of a revelation in consciousness is approaching, where it'll be as epic as from when people viewed the Earth as the center and the sun revolving around the Earth to how we perceive it now. The same thing will happen in consciousness, and that consciousness kind of creates its own reality. So there may be extinctions, or it may not be. We shouldn't look at it as extinction, but rather transformation. And
I'm not against what you're saying. I think that that's what I was trying to talk about, is that we need to go through this big transformation of our social program here. We need to pull back from the table of consumption and start thinking of ourselves as part of nature rather than the whole reason for nature's existence. And that kind of, you know, if that whatever would generate that would be great. And I believe this. I wanted to briefly talk about, just really briefly talk about what the last gentleman was talking about, how the Earth might handle a lot more people. I ran into one statistic that talked about how we could actually, if we all had just lived on rice, we could and had just minimal area, we could, there could be 30 billion people on the planet. But to live like a middle class American, which the world sees on television, there's really only enough left for 2.5 billion people. So we're already over the carrying capacity of middle Americans. So that's one aspect. And what he also talked about Rwanda. Gerald Diamond talked about how Rwanda was really a product of generations passing down the land to their children, and all of a sudden the parcel they passed down is not big enough to feed the family. And so that's when the genocide broke out. So, yeah.
All right, let's go to our first-time caller, another Mike. They're everywhere. Mike. Evansville, Indiana. Hey, it's Mike night. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Hey, George, Michael, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Hey, I have a question I've never, ever heard of that answered before or asked. Has a child ever been conceived in space by astronauts? Did mankind conceive kids in space and continue our species? That's the only question I have.
Well, I think in our time, but what do you think about old times, Michael? Again, if you look at past civilizations, some people think we had high technology.
Well, you know, it's certainly not impossible to think of a birth in space. I mean, they can do everything else in space. So if there was ever a civilization that had the advanced ability to use space travel in space, that would be, you know, there's that possibility. And I, you know, just as our general record, you know, our published documents these days tell us that it hasn't been done yet.
Next up, let's go to Tom in Indiana. Hey, Tom, thanks for calling us. Go ahead, sir.
Well, good evening. I have been listening with great attention to this program tonight. It's extremely interesting. But I have a question, kind of a hypothetical question. But suppose that people from beings from another planet came here and looked at the human race, you have to ask yourself, what would they think of us? Yeah. Here we are multiplying like crazy, and we have only limited resources. There's a book out that that's taken to that extreme, and its book is called Spheres. Sphere was Michael Crichton's book. This one is called Spheres, and it delves into that possibility of what would happen. But what I wanted to discuss with you was the question of water. It seems to me the water always ends up where we don't need it. But the world is awash in water, you know, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. And the answer has to be electricity. It's the only way we're going to be able to produce enough fresh water out of seawater. And I don't know how many people listening have been aware of this movement to try to promote something called the thorium reactor. I think you've mentioned it a few times, George.
Yes.
But I really believe in it. I really believe that it would give us what fusion has promised. But fusion is always 20 years away.
Right, right.
And we have the thorium reactor working at Oak Ridge in 1960. Of course, now the Chinese are working on it like mad, and I suppose the way things go, we could be in the embarrassing position of them taking our technology that we developed years ago and turning it around and selling it back to us.
Right.
That makes no sense to me. And I wish that somehow the government could pay attention to this, because if they don't, we will end up desalinating our water with some machine that's made in Beijing or somewhere. And I think that's not a good development at all.
Not a good development. I just read something the other day talking about how we should be putting a whole bunch of our attention into desalination right now, because, yes, like you say,
I think
water all over the globe, but we need the machines to actually change it into drinkable, potable water. And that's something we haven't put our money into, and I don't know. It's almost like gasoline. We're holding on to gasoline where we could actually produce something else besides that didn't pollute, that we could have a hydrogen. They were talking about that, and there was at one point Schwarzenegger, governor of California, wanted to put hydrogen refueling stations on the freeways just so that to promote that kind of technology. And why aren't we doing that? I'm really frustrated at times of why we don't make these technological jumps that could improve us so much. Why don't we approach it like landing on the moon or the dropping of the atom bomb? I mean, just put all our effort into it. I don't know.
Rusty is in Breezy Point, New York now. Thank you for calling, Rusty. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George. How are you? I spoke to you a few months ago a couple of times. Anyway, this thing about the population, I got a suggestion, but I doubt if it would work. But I think the best way to hit somebody is in their pocketbook. In other words, if you have a lot of cops and firemen around my area, and they're making like $50,000, $60,000 a year maybe, and it's hard enough to live on $50,000 in New York City. But if they have a baby, they ought to be charged a fee of, say, one-fourth of the income. That way, instead of getting exemptions, they should pay when they have a kid. They should have to pay. In other words, Jeez. Now they got to live on $750 a week, which is almost impossible in New
York.
That's
impossible. Yeah, exactly.
And that would make them think twice about having kids or having more than one kid. And another thing is, I think they ought to get rid of public schools as we know them and make schools private, where if you have a kid, pay for your own kid to go to school. George, let me ask you something. How do you feel when you're paying the same property taxes, say a guy next to you or a guy up the street who has two or three kids in school, when you know most of your property taxes are going to pay for public schools and you have no kids in school?
I've always had kids, of course. I've been the one on the other side. But no, I know where you're coming from, and but we probably need a whole entire revolution and change when it comes to all of this. But an asteroid's going to wipe us out anyway, Michael, so all this is a moot point, huh?
Right. Well, asteroids regularly hit the planet about every... I have a nice little map that's the history of the Earth, and it's a big chart, and it just shows all the impacts, and they're kind of almost come every 100 million years. Now, that's if you look at a chart of the existence of life on Earth, that doesn't seem like a lot, but to man nowadays, 100 million years, that sounds horrendous, but it could be tomorrow. I mean, it's been 65 million years since the asteroid saw the sky and ended the Cretaceous, knocked out the dinosaurs and made way for us. And so, you know, we're only, what, 35 million more years just on the regular schedule of these things, or they aren't that regular. I mean, they just appear, you know. So an asteroid could knock us out. It's a grand possibility. And probably... and has knocked out life in the past.
Oh, well, yeah, it wiped out the dinosaurs 63 million years ago, which was the last extinction, wasn't it?
Right, it was the last extinction, yeah.
Let's go to Keith, Shreveport, Louisiana. Hello, Keith, go ahead.
Yes, hello, sir. How are you doing this afternoon? I wanted to call, and I'm hearing this conversation about how population is a problem, and it's, you know, this arbitrary number of 9 billion, 6 billion, 4 billion, 3 billion, it reminded me of the conversation in the movie Interstellar, where the elite of the world and the intellectuals of the world just decide, oh, well, you know what, there's nothing we can do to solve the problem, so let's just let everyone die. To me, the whole situation, the whole issue, has nothing to do with some arbitrary number of population. It's our ability to manage resources. The entire continent...
Which we can't do, apparently.
And yeah, there it is. Therein lies the question. It's not what our population size is. It's what we do with it. We pay farmers not to grow food. We pay all over farm fields.
We pay people
to not produce carbon dioxide because it's dangerous for the environment, even though every single plant organism on this planet that engages in any type of biodiversity requires carbon to produce oxygen, the very thing that allows us to live here longer and healthier lives.
We take care of our own. Go ahead.
Well, I just think that, what you got to realize is the immensity of the population explosion that's happened just in the last 50 years. Coming out of World War II, we had 1.4 billion. We now have 7 billion. We tripled the population in the last 50 years. We're headed for... a similar situation by the end of this century, 10 or 11 billion. You know, this, if you look at a chart of this, you know, it looks like, you know, we're going along, there's a small growth, and then it's the hockey stick again. It looks just like a hockey stick. You just go straight up. And that's, you know, this we're not even talking about that or addressing that. And it is important, and it is catastrophic too.
Let's go to Steve in Seattle, Washington now, get his thoughts. Steven, go ahead.
Hi guys, how are you?
Good, Steve, thank you.
Good. My question is, the day the food supply really does run out, what is really going to happen to us?
I think we'll be long gone before that happens, Steve, but what do you think, Michael?
Yeah, I kind of think so too. I mean, I think that what's going to get us is a tray load of, it could be an asteroid, it could be a disease process, pandemics, hunger is one of them for sure.
And, you know, it's happening with the, it happened in Rwanda. You know, so there's a variety of types of things that can take us out. And probably the combination is the one that'll get us rather than a single thing, rather than just hunger itself.
Well, rather than hunger ourselves. Stephen, thanks for your comments. Appreciate it. Michael, as we look at this entire situation, immediately, what do you see as the most pressing issue facing us?
You know, I mean, I hate to keep going back to it, but the most important issue facing us is population. You know, it's something, you know, people want to talk about climate change. And climate change is important because, you know, what they're looking at is in all these mass extinction events, CO2 had a major role in 4 out of 5 of the last mass extinction events. So that CO2 is important. But like I said, I believe if we were back to the population that we had in 1800, we wouldn't have this crisis going. And it's kind of something we're kind of ignoring, or maybe it's like, you know, we argue about climate change and we avoid the topic of population growth, and maybe population growth is even touchier than climate change. I don't really know, but it's something we need to get over. We need one of these big social changes. We need one of these big, huge evolutionary leaps in our attitude towards it.
So, when you wrote The Next Species, what did you see that made you want to write that?
Well, I saw Anthony Bernofsky's paper that was back about 3 years ago, saying that we were getting close to a mass extinction event. Now the new paper says we're already there, and to actually think that man might be hurtling towards something like that, and it's our fault, and that we're kind of denying or we're avoiding the population issue as a prime mover. You know, that's what kind of pushed me to write the book. But it also also gave me a chance to go to Amazon and the Andes and Africa and England and Maui and see the whales, and that was another big impetus to wanting to do it, just because just to kind of celebrate all the wonderful places that still are out there.
Hopeful or not about the future, Michael?
You know, I think you and I and Homo sapiens have a limited lifespan. That's just the way it is. You know, species go extinct, if we can pull back from the table of consumption, if we can pull back and start acting like we're a part of nature rather than the whole reason for its existence, yeah, that would be great. And that still is a possibility. And I'm still hopeful.
Very good. Michael, thank you for being on the program. Really appreciate it. Good luck with your work, The Next Species. Up next, Sound Off, Open Lines. Get ready.